Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com. Welcome back, Manage Me Podcast team. This is Todd Doherty from Manage Me Podcast. Season 3 continues where the focus is 100% on talking with coaches, consultants, people who are working with professionals and individuals and teams. And today I have Nathaniel Morris, the founder and executive strategy coach for his company, EQ Digital. So they are a business strategy organization helping retail executives, senior technology leaders, really create harmony between IT and business. And I love that when Nathaniel and I had our pre-podcast, as I call it, our session, which I always think we should record because there's great nuggets in there. But it really resonated with me because I often will talk about myself as when people ask me, you know, what do I do? I say usually I'm that glue between technology and business. I was never a coder developer, but I've always been in business and I love bringing the two together. And here we have Nathaniel, who's made a company out of it. So Nathaniel, welcome to the Manage Me Podcast. Great to have you on the show.
Thanks very much, Todd. And I am happy to be here. I loved our conversation when we sort of got a pregame ahead as well. And we had a lot in common as we talked about the organization of technology and business and career paths. So looking forward to the conversation today.
Yeah. I almost forgot about that. We do have kind of quite a bit of a parallel path. I've had that interesting enough with some other coaches that I've interviewed this season. A few that we've been even at the same organization, somewhat overlapping and stuff. We haven't been at the same organization, but there's certainly some parallels that we'll hopefully get into the podcast. But I gave a very high-level overview of your company, EQ Digital. Tell me a little bit more. Tell me about, you know, how did you start it? What do you do? What's your specialty and what do you focus on?
Absolutely. So when I started my career, I was early into leadership and first team, very small team. I got my first assessment back as a leader. And I will never forget the words. One of the employees had written that I was a cold, emotionless robot. And it really struck me very much to my core, and I didn't understand what that meant truly. I thought I was being professional, thought I was doing the right things, providing the support and the training and what have you, but it was the tactics of leadership and not truly the full picture of leadership. And I was managing really candidly. And over the next several years, as I began to continue to grow in larger teams and responsibilities, I began to find that there was more and more of this journey that was beyond the technical side of the job. I came up in e-commerce, very much understood business and technical blend, but leadership requires even more of that and an understanding of how to help people grow that. Had gone out into the workplace, had grown my career there, leading large technical teams. I was often brought in when teams were dysfunctional or maybe when a leader had left and somebody said, hey, we really need to go and figure out what's this going on with this organization, and began to really enjoy that practice as I went down my journey of becoming a better leader and going to seminars and books and training and really trying to become a better human, if you will. And that's really what leadership is about the people. And once I got to that understanding, I was leading a team and I said, I want to do this and help other organizations. And I had run my own company. I come from a heritage of individuals. My father, my grandfather had both been business owners. And so I decided I wanted to step out. I made that decision, and a week later, the world shut down. So timing was off a little bit strategically, but I really have enjoyed the conversation and getting to work with organizations of various sizes. But what I consistently find is that this is a need. People are trying to understand, how do we bridge our technical teams who might just be operating off of a requirements document that is, to some degree, without emotion, without connection. It's just kind of a set of objects. Maybe it's a written document. Maybe it's some type of a, whether it be Kanban or Scrum, some type of a queue of work that needs to be done. They don't have the connection to the business and the why. And engineers want it, and business doesn't understand why they need it. And there's disconnect, and helping bridge that helps so many companies. And we founded EQ Digital with that mindset, right? There's the digital, there's the technology. You blend that EQ on top of it. It's not just the IQ, but the EQ. And that's what we've been able to do. And it's a fun journey. We're looking forward to talking more about the topic today.
Yeah. Wow. It's such a great intro. There's so much there. Let's start with the last piece you talked about. You talked about requirements document versus what the business wants, and just, you know, that sort of rub that happens there, right? Sort of this, and I don't want to say adversarial. It's not, you hopefully typically not adversarial. Sometimes it can be. But you know, the business just like, get it done, right? And the developers are like, yeah, but why would somebody want it that way? Like, why would you want the button blue? Who cares? And like, well, we've done research, you know. So there's that natural sort of missing emotional connection there. And it sounds like that's what your organization helps with.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things where what works in manufacturing doesn't necessarily work in technology in certain aspects, right? So it's very easy for a business owner to look at it and maybe to say, well, creating applications, creating solutions is just like creating something in a factory. I need to systematize it. I need to put overseers over it, have checkpoints and drive. And that's not necessarily the case, right? It's very much more of a creative process than it is a manufacturing process, right? And so understanding that we are problem solving, I'm not saying there should be zero structure in tech, but we often put so many layers between the end user and the actual solution inventor, if you will, that we have, you know, it's the old telephone game. We have things that get lost in translation. We have things that get added because of interpretation. And then you wind up with a situation, and there's great illustrations in diagrams and what have you, but you wind up with so much gap. And really, it's about creating a connection between the two. It's about bringing the two together and helping create a shared understanding, shared context, right? And really, to do that, you have to create in technology a place of safety, right? Because some of it's amount of experimenting, and yes, there's a requirement, but it's not about the requirement, it's about the outcome. And let's make sure we're focused on that we're delivering the right outcomes and we're going forward with the right solutions, and not just we check the box, it's done, and we're past it, right? So a lot of that has to do with context and leadership and training leaders how to lead technical teams and business owners how to work with them and putting them on the same page. And right. Unfortunately, with six or seven layers, you can't be on the same page unless you put them in the same room.
Absolutely. You know, and the where I've seen that work, and it's I'll be honest, it's been infrequent, but where I've seen that work really, really well is when the product team who's by the way, met with the customer, right? So that's the ultimate source of truth, if you will, right? Product team has interpreted what they think the customer wants, hands that over to the business analyst or developing team, and what comes back to the product team is even better than what they had asked for, right? They said, well, you asked for the button to be blue and round, but we think it might need to be square and red, and here's why, right? Mm-hmm. That's when you know you've really got a well-oiled machine there, that there's creativity, there's thought, mm-hmm. they're not just order taking and just developing the round red button versus the square green button. I can't remember what I said now, but
well, it has to do with the fact of when you get into a team, you know it's well-oiled. The way I would phrase what you're describing is, when I get into a team and no one has the monopoly on the ideas,
right?
Then I know that it's not all tech's way and it's not all business. It's a collaboration. That's when you know you've got harmony.
Absolutely, absolutely. The other thing I want to go back to the earlier point you had talked about is it just sort of your first experience with leadership, right? Or management and leadership. And by the way, that's not an uncommon, I probably have a very, very similar story of of getting feedback, whether directly or indirectly, of just how I was performing and what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges is that typically the story in the business world is they take a really great someone who's doing very well and promote them to be a manager, right? And the assumption is, well, Nathaniel's doing so well that we'll put him in management and he'll teach everyone else how to do the same thing because he's doing so well. Well, that's great theory, but we haven't given Nathaniel the tools to be able to do that. And by the way, Nathaniel may not want to do that. He may want to still be an individual contributor and just perform. But there's that sort of, forced into management kind of philosophy. Not always, but very often. And that's one of the other challenges is, okay, I'm going to continue to do what I did and what worked for me, but now you're responsible for a team that may not work for everyone in every case and every individual.
Or worse yet, you become responsible for the output of an entire team and you try and take it all on yourself and you're still trying to be hands on the keys. And now the team is disconnected, disenfranchised because you're doing their job essentially, as opposed to being able to hand off and truly lead. So there's a couple different pitfalls that you'll wind up there. And it's absolutely common in technical teams to say, look, this person is a fantastic contributor. We're going to promote them. And there's different motivations there. Sometimes it's what you're describing. It's like, wow, we need their skill with the rest of the team. So let's put them as in charge. Well, that's not the only path to cross-train and grow that team is to put them in charge. The other thing is sometimes an individual will throw their hat in the ring and a leader will go, well, obviously they want it, but they haven't had the conversation with that senior engineer or that senior technologist to say, look, this is a different set of skills. Let's talk about if this is really what you want to do. And what might be motivation is, hey, I'm looking for a change, or I'm looking for more money, or I'm looking for the next step in my career. And if an organization's, particularly in technology, is designed to where the only step up is management, then that's going to create those pitfalls. Right. And oftentimes we find that organizations who will take it as a different approach, the military is a great model for this. They have many options that aren't just leadership of people, but you can get into specialist style roles and you can get into other skills where you can grow. And I think that's a great model for technology to say we can have a career path that doesn't include you managing people, but lets you grow as an individual, both from a monetary or compensation or impact, whatever that individual's motivation is. And so learning that and understanding that is really important for a leadership team.
Yeah. And to your point, asking that question, right? Just because, Joe put his hat in the ring doesn't mean that Joe may be the best candidate or may be the best manager leader for that role. So, yeah.
Or may even understand the role.
Right. Right. Yeah. You have, kind of four steps to high functioning teams. We could probably spend the whole podcast talking about just that, but can you briefly just summarize, what do you think some of the areas are, the four areas for high functioning teams?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you start talking about high functioning technology organizations, we kind of break it into those four pillars. The people side, we've kind of been talking about a little bit, but you're really talking about understanding the culture that's inside the organization. And culture is not about the free lunches and the free sodas and ice cream on Tuesdays. Culture has to do with creating an environment where people can really enjoy their work. And you can't create the culture, you can only design for it, much like a gardener doesn't grow the plants. They tend to a place where they can grow well. And then trust is another conversation. And really a leader's job here is modeling trust, and then also removing things that are affecting trust, things like gossip, things like dysfunction, or candidly, as one phrase is, sanctioned incompetence, right? This is somebody that is a good individual, maybe from a friendship perspective, they're a horrible teammate. And so now we're not dealing with the dysfunction. That creates a trust problem. So understanding that. And so culture and then clarity is the third one in that area. And that has to do with making sure everybody truly knows what the mission's about, both at the individual team level as well as the company level. Never in the world of work has this been more important of clarity in the last two generations that have come into the workplace. Clarity around what are we about? Why do we exist? That really matters to them. And so creating that clarity is oftentimes a blind spot for leaders. They don't realize that there's a gap. I've worked with one team recently, and they thought every team knew what they were trying to accomplish, but the team didn't realize truly what the overall mission was, and it was creating uncertainty and turnover and those type of things in the organization, which are extremely costly. When you talk about process, process is another area where you wind up with oftentimes one or two ditches, right? Either you have so much process because somebody's come in and built a ton of process where we can't turn around three times without a document to say how we're supposed to do it. But on the other hand, you wind up with no process and every team does their own thing. And really, it's about finding the right balance, right? We need enough process to create structure. We don't need so much process that it's red tape. And finding that blend and that mix is really key to high functioning organizations. Otherwise, you have waste, either too much waste from we're doing things 17 ways or too much waste from time because we have to have five meetings to get anything done. So there's a balance here. Then we talk about the partners. That's also a key area. Who you work with as a team, whether that be the big names out there in tech or whether that be smaller partners. Great illustration of this right now is the security landscape. There are hundreds of security vendors right now, and knowing who to partner with and how you're getting your solutions is extremely critical. Not to mention when you start talking about some of your other key software and capabilities, your tooling, all of the different components that go into a technical organization, regardless of whether you're a software as a service company or whether you're a retail shop, your partnerships matter. And it's not just a business transaction. Truly getting into a strategic model, and we've got a whole framework we could talk about and go down that rabbit hole of, you know, just all of the different things that we could look at around how key vendor relationships should be managed for compliance, yes, but more so for strategic impact. I've seen companies save as much as 20% more by building strong key partnerships and feeding those relationships. Again, it comes down to the people side. And then the final component of that is we'll talk about the product, right? What is actually delivered to the end customer? And we've hinted at this a little bit in our conversation, but if technical teams are not talking to the end user, I'm not talking about the chief operating officer who's writing a requirement. I'm talking about the individual who's truly using the solution, whether again, frontline and retail or what have you. We truly have to be customer centric. And that's where I see technology teams get tripped up is they're measuring based on uptime. They're measuring based on server capacity. They're not measuring based on transaction successes or exception fallouts in a point of sale, things that truly would help make it better for the business. It's the wrong metrics. So each of those areas, there's 12 total components to those, but those, they break into those four areas around people and process and partners and product. And it applies across every technical function. And we've seen when you focus on these, you notice I didn't talk about buying new tech. I didn't talk about the latest and greatest and writing something and all the buzzwords of AI and, you know, all these kind of things, because these are the block and tackle that really help set companies apart. You know, there's great ideas, but if you can't execute, the ideas don't really matter. And this is all about technology executing at a high value for the business.
Yeah, totally agree with you. It's interesting. I found myself saying this several times over the last couple of weeks. You know, we need dreamers, right? But more than dreamers, we need executors. We need doers. And you know, there's a significant difference there, right? And it should be somewhere around the 80-20 rule. Like 20% should be dreamers, but 80% should be doers. Mm-hmm. That's my philosophy, at least, I think. And I totally agree with you. Before I go to that, one area, all of that sounded fantastic. Totally agree with you. It's the blocking and tackling that wins, right? You can have the greatest idea in the world, but it all comes down to execution, and really great execution typically is that blocking and tackling simple stuff, right? I just said this the other day, you know, there's people who say, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. And I've caught myself twice over the last couple of months saying, you know, I actually have made a really, really good living sweating the small stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You know, getting the detail stuff done and done well, whether it's individually or leading teams. And so anyway, but we do need dreamers.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, what we do need dreamers, right? You still got to have the ideas and all those things to keep that, you know, that light that you're chasing after.
Yeah. And I think when you talk about sweating the small stuff, I have a diagram on my wall in my office here where I talk about the difference between organizations that are structured versus that are unstructured. And the world of small things that you were just describing, really, it applies at different levels, right? At the strategic level, you're not about sweating the small stuff. You're about right. What is the vision? What is the clarity? The details aren't so much what we need to focus on. But when you get to execution, the small things are what create the difference. So it is truly about consistency and drive, and you need both, right? And it just depends at what level you're focusing on at the time. So I love the fact that you've made a living out of sweating small things, because that's truly what it's about. When you're putting things together and putting teams together, that's where you've got to focus, is on those small things. Versus if you're like, hey, I want to attack a brand new industry and I want to invent something brand new, you are a little bit more macro, and that's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, got to have that. Yeah, we wouldn't have new creative technology or ideas or companies or things without those visionary people who frankly, they just assume the details are going to happen, right? It's This is my vision, and the people, I'm going to get great people to go attack that vision and figure out all those details, right? And that's fine. That's fine. One area that you talked about was partners. And, you know, not every business or not every even group, you know, selects to something, you know, it's built by partner, whatever. But if one of the lessons learned in my career is when you go down that partner route, which is fine and fantastic, is you are still responsible for the partner and the partner output. That I've been in a number of organizations where like, oh, well, you know, our third party did that. And I'm like, well, okay, how are you measuring? What is their success criteria? Do they understand our customer impact, you know, all of those questions that you just talked about, I believe from an internal organization, absolutely applies from the partnership organization as well. And a couple of times in my career, I've been responsible for partnerships. One in particular, a financial technology institution, and we had outsourced a significant piece of our business. And the FDIC, you know, good old FDIC came in and said, what we're seeing in this banking world is that the companies that are outsourcing aren't feeling as though they're responsible for that partnership. And if something goes wrong that the partner does and it affects your customer, you're still responsible. And so I actually had to meet with one of the national auditors from the FDIC. And I got to tell you, I was, you know, my boss was there, my boss's bosses were there. And I had my team and we put together this whole big binder of how we managed our relationship. And it was very detailed, all the way down to, we literally every month monitored the invoice and the charges that we were getting charged for and balanced them and made sure they were the accurate charges, and all the way to the metrics that we were, the service levels and all that stuff. And I was sweating it because, you know, this was big time. The FDIC was there. And if this goes wrong, you know, literally they could shut down your business, right?
Right.
I was pretty sure that wasn't going to happen, but we went through the audit and, you know, this senior FDIC guy, and we were about 20, 25 minutes in, and he's like, yep, that's it. And he closed his binder. And I thought, oh no, what did I just say? Like, where did this go wrong? And he said, this is great. This is what everyone should be doing. And I thought, oh my goodness, thank goodness. But it was and is a lot of work to manage a partner at that level. But I'm glad it's part of what you talk about from a, you know, high functioning technology team. And that's part of it.
Yeah. And it's because it's part of the transaction. It's part of the outcome for the customer, for the business. So you have to have that purview. And whether it be like you're describing a partnership that you're relying on there, or whether it be a security partner, or whether it be the partner that's providing you with the laptops that your clients, your consumers internally are using, right? Your customers internally are using. You have to have those relationships. And, you know, one of the great models is to build a quarterly process where you're bringing those strategic partners in. And I love to bring them into the room at the same time. And then I can talk to them collectively and say, here's the challenges we're looking at. Here's where we're planning 3, 4, 5 quarters out. This is what we're trying to accomplish, and help us. You have a greater visibility into the marketplace. A lot of times you see what other failure success stories look like. You can help me avoid the failures and achieve the successes. So help me as a partner and really align strategically versus saying, I'm just trying to buy something and do a transaction and then move on. Like, it really does come down to true alignment and both managing them well and then leveraging them well to drive the value for the organization.
you know, I'd have to go find it, Nathaniel. I've got it somewhere, but I used to have this chart, you know, XY chart, right? And it was, you know, the zero point, it was, you know, a line, and it was a few curves, few arcs, right? And the first arc was, the bottom, so the x-axis was time, right? Zero to, you know, several years, and the y-axis was value, right? So time and value, and it was a partner management chart, and over time, the theory was if you sign a partnership agreement, right, and you're outsourcing whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is, and if you just sign it and not really manage the vendor well, you know, you'll get, you know, a decent amount of value, right? And if you sign the agreement and you manage the relationship and, you know, you monitor the service levels and you pay the bills and, you know, that kind of stuff, you get a little bit more of a value, right? But the high arc, the top of the arc, this is hard to do on a podcast because I'm doing it with my hands, but the high arc is when you really describe what you just said, right? Is you bring the partner in, you talk to them about your issues currently, you talk about your roadmap, you know, you're several quarters out, you bring them in as a partner, they bring in, because remember, you're one of their customers, right? Hopefully they've got dozens and dozens of customers, right? You get to learn from those other customers. Maybe you don't know who they are, maybe you don't know, doesn't matter, right? Maybe your competitors, but when you manage the partnership relationship at that level, the value exceeds the value of the actual signed contract you have with the partner. And that's where you want to be. So I always created like partner owners on my team. So, hey, you own this partnership. You're responsible for really managing this relationship here because we want the most value out of this partnership as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I was with one organization, just to put a point on that. And they worked with a strategic vendor in that way as a true partner. And in 1 year, they had a $2 million impact in savings on an acquisition. And wow. It was directly because of the relationship, because when I began to talk with some of the other individuals out there, there were organizations that were 10 times their size who weren't getting the same value. And the only difference was because of the relationship and the strategic partnership that was there. So it's real money, it's real impact, and that's not even allowing for the other components of strategic alignment and everything else that you're benefiting from and the people that you're getting access to from their side, but just on the financial acquisition, it was a $2 million change. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal, yeah. Big deal to most companies, absolutely. So great conversation. Tell me more about, you know, how do you work with your clients? And, you know, because we've talked, so I know some of the answers, but, you know, you can work in a million different ways, but, you know, what's your ideal client and what are some of the areas that, you know, maybe recently that you focused on or you're finding you're having the best impact or most impact with your clients?
Absolutely. Well, I primarily work with two style clients. We work with entrepreneurs who are, sort of in that growth phase of their business. They're just starting out into technology. That's really a strategic engagement that we do to help them get started on the right foot and not, you know, waste time and money. And they may have investment dollars, those type of things. So we really help them there. But we also work in a large sense with technical organizations who are either in a big period of change, right? So maybe new leadership change, that type of thing, or they really are in a period where they're like, the business wants us to really maximize the return. Maybe the business is struggling to find cost savings, and so we need more efficiency, or maybe they're gearing up for growth again, and they need to make sure they scale properly. And the way we engage is we come in with a focused approach that we bring our P4 methodology that we just talked about, those four key areas, and we run an assessment with the team. We understand where they're currently at. We benchmark it with real numbers so we can understand what's going on. And within about 30 days, and it seems like this would just blow your mind, but within 30 days, we can get a handle on what is going on in the technology organization and what levers need to be pulled to start moving it in the right direction. And we bring that back to the technology leadership, the business leadership, and say, here's where we've got to invest. Here's what we've identified. And here's the focus. That may be coaching plans for leaders to grow them. That might be recommendations on some additional structure changes that says, hey, we've got misalignment here that needs to be focused on. Might be some other gaps that are there. Might be a clarity conversation that says, hey, the technical team really needs more time to understand from the business what we're all about. And let's create a plan that puts that in place. And we've got structure for those workshops. And we really help create that alignment of that middle tier to senior leadership with technology. And when you fix that, every time that we get that alignment, you'll find that it will just permeate throughout the organization. You know, the old proverb says the fish rots from the head, right? And so you start with the leadership and it will go throughout the whole team and really make an impact. And we found, you know, it's typically about a 6 to 10 month transformation that you have, but you'll start seeing impact very quickly once we get past that initial 30 days, because now we can start fixing it, right? It's continuing to degrade. We stop the things that are causing a negative impact, and now we can start a level foundation to build forward.
Yeah, half of that, I would imagine, is just calling it out, right? Hey, we have these issues, right? And we're gonna call them out. We're gonna name them, and we're gonna prioritize them and start attacking these. That's what I find, at least. It's probably one of the biggest issues. It's just okay, you know. It's highly doubtful that those are unknown issues. Just no one's actually brought it front and center, like it sounds like your company does at EQ Digital.
Visibility, naming it, and then having a plan to address it, right? That's what we're going to bring to the table, is to be able to say, we can measure it, we can show change over time as it's resolved, and we've got a plan to help solve it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, because I don't remember. I used to follow the statistic. So you may know off the top of your head, I'm not sure. But, you know, it's something like, it was like 85, 86% of all IT projects fail. And it's because of all the things we just talked about, right? You know, lack of clarity, vision, mission, communication, you know, the people, the culture, all that stuff. It's got to be at least still at that level, I would imagine.
Yeah, very similar. The PMI just released their recent report for 2023, and it's still in that same ballpark. And what's even more staggering is every failure averages about $1 million loss. So every project is roughly $1 million average on impact for, you know, let's call it mid-sized companies and above. And those, I mean, to swing and miss $1 million swings, that's a big, big impact. And what's even more so on that report that I was just reading just this past week is the conversation that the organizations are saying, we need more skills besides just tech. We need skills for problem solving and leadership and business understanding. Everything you and I are talking about, they're saying we need it, but then they're only spending 25 cents of their training dollar on those problems. And it's like, no, you have to focus the investment if you want the change.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, that's why when we met, we first started talking, it just really resonated with me about, you know, what your company is doing, because just think about how companies are structured. There's IT and business. Typically, they don't report to the same, you know, the same organization. And so, you know, you need to have some way of bringing those teams together, of looking at the challenges and the leadership, all the things you just talked about. And, you know, that's what you do, right? So when we started talking, I'm like, yes, that's exactly what needs to happen. You need someone who understands the technology, but also understands the business side and can bring those two together and talk the talk of either one, right? You know, sometimes the technical people are too technical for the business and the business people are too businessy for the technical people, right? You know, they don't, you know, the technical people don't care about EBITDA, you know, I don't care about margin, right? You know, so they kind of miss each other, but, you know, having you and your company bring those together is so necessary. So that's why I was excited to have you on.
I appreciate it. I enjoy the conversation. I always love to talk about that intersection, because it's where the value is for companies in today's world.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are we not talking about? What's something that I'm not asking you, or you want to make sure that we get across here to folks? I'm sure there's a million things, but
there are a million things, but context and relevance of today's world, right? This is not just about the value to the business and saying, okay, it's about the ROI. That's there. But it also affects the customer experience. It drives truly a better outcome for users when your technical team is executing at a high functioning level. You could look at companies that are delivering phenomenal results in the marketplace for customers. I'm not talking about from a financial, I'm just saying customers love them. And what you'll find is technology organizations that are at these levels, considering these four areas we just talked about. The other thing is the employee experience, both technical employees and non-technical employees. It's so valuable to understand that 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the most sophisticated tech that anyone used in their lifetime was on their job.
Yeah.
They didn't have it at home. Computers were the extremely expensive and they were owned by companies, at least the high end. Now, the most sophisticated technology begins when they're in elementary school or middle school, when they get their smartphone. And now they're walking into workplaces and they're looking at it going, wow, this is outdated. This doesn't make sense. That was what I alluded to with some of the conversation earlier on the generations that are coming into the workforce. So understanding that employee experience and how that drives the capability of recruiting, how that drives the capability of reducing turnover, all of these are tied into an organization having a high functioning technology team that is aligned with the business goals. And all of that ties from one central place. And it's so funny, it's the blocking and tackling. We're back to foundational basics. It has a lot of tentacles that affects the entirety of the business, but we're fundamentally at the basics.
That's such a great point. Well. I'm sorry, that's such a great point. You know, the expectation of technology and process and how things should work coming in the door is way different than it was, like you said, 10, 15, 20 years ago. You're absolutely right. The expectation that, you know, my first day of my job, my laptop, my phone, my voice over IP, my, you know, all this system, everything should just work. Right. Mm-hmm. But flashback, I remember I joined a startup and my first day I had no laptop. They didn't quite have a desk for me. I literally sat in a chair next to the printer. That was my desk for like the first week. I was like here's your printouts guy, you know, while I was learning and talking to people and stuff like that. I think that as you were talking, I was thinking, oh my gosh, I didn't even have a laptop for the first week because it just, you know, hadn't come in and all that stuff. But now, you know, the expectation is I've got a working, you know, Mac before I walk in the door. I'm connected to all the internal systems that I need. My phone is, you know, activated. My corporate card is like all that stuff. Yeah. That I need to produce and to deliver is 100% active and ready to go. It sounds crazy saying that, but that's how the expectation is.
Table stakes.
Table stakes. Yeah, absolutely. And translate that out to not just the employee, but the customer assumes that as well. When I sign up for your product, SaaS product, whatever it is, I expect it to be there the day that you tell me it's going to be there, that's going to work, it's going to be 100% ready, you know, all of that. Not like it used to be, like, oh yeah, it's going to take a couple of weeks to get going and we'll get you set up and then we'll train you. And nope, I want it to work day one, right?
Thank you, Amazon, and thank you, Apple.
Yeah, exactly.
Expectations.
Exactly. Disruption at its finest. And so, you know, helping companies, helping individuals, helping teams, helping leaders through that disruption is what EQ Digital does. Awesome. What's the best way? How do you get in contact with your clients? How do they get in contact with you? How do you begin to work a relationship together?
Absolutely. So eqdigital.com has all of our contact information and a little bit about what we do. And then I would encourage, follow me on LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn. That's my primary source of where I'm putting out content and information. Just clear, straight talk on what is business and technology and the connection between the two and how to grow technical leaders. So definitely would love to see you on LinkedIn and follow us there.
I will put all of that in, you know, your website, LinkedIn link, all in the podcast notes, episode notes and all that stuff. Love the conversation. One last question, I think I might have more, but one definite last question I want to ask you is, and I've completely ripped this off from another podcast, but I love it. When you hear Manage Me Coaching and the Manage Me podcast, what do you think of? What's your first thought?
Well, Manage Me has to do with the fact of I have to lead myself first, right? If I'm going to lead others, I have to be able to lead myself. And that comes down to continual growing, continual understanding from others' feedback. You know, the understanding that you are going to see me. I don't have eyes that allow me to see myself. I have to get that feedback from others, right? And so learning that, being open to that feedback, growing, and then also in a large way, understanding that I am what I am to some extent, right? I'm going to have strengths, I'm going to have weaknesses. I don't have to be a perfect, complete leader in all facets. I'm going to have areas I know I'm going to struggle with. I've got to accept that to some degree, grow them, improve them, learn how to mitigate them, or in some cases say, hey, I need somebody beside me who can help me with that skill, but accepting where I'm at. So growth, accepting, really inward focus of leading me. That way I can help lead others.
You got it. I almost named the company Leading Me, but anyway, Manage Me sounded a little more, a little better. But yes, you hit the nail perfectly. Love that description, and thank you for sharing that. Well, we again could talk for another, you know, another hour for sure, easily. But what I'd like to do is, you know, cap it off here. I'd love to leave the door open though, and have you come back maybe at some point in the near future and give us a bit of an update maybe of how things are going with EQ Digital and, you know, kind of where, what you're learning. And, you know, as you're working with these companies, I think the folks that are listening, probably I imagine were shaking their heads of yes, yes, that happens at my organization. And yes, we could use that help. And So I think it would be great to you know, continue to hear how things are going.
Absolutely. Would love to do so. Technology is constantly changing. The environment's constantly changing. I'm certain there will be much to talk about in the future as well. So, and I Absolutely. Really appreciate the opportunity to be here and have the conversation. Thoroughly enjoyed it on this now formal episode after our pre-run. So it's a great conversation.
Awesome. Well, I said I'd thank you a million times, but thank you so much for taking time, sharing what you shared about, you know, your company, EQ Digital, and how you help customers, your customers and clients. Really informative.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, these podcasts don't pay for themselves, so I want to let you know that I'm a member of Dollar Shave Club. I've been a member since 2013. It literally costs me $5 a month, less than $5 a month, to get my razors delivered to me for my face and my head. And you have the opportunity to do the same thing. Check in my episode notes. You'll see a link to Dollar Shave Club. You can get your razors, your shaving cream, body wash. They sell tons of products. And the quality is exactly the same as you would buy from any of the regular shavers out there, all the name brands. So Dollar Shave Club, can't recommend them enough. Thanks for listening today. It's always great to share ideas and also get feedback from you. So please send me an email at managemepodcast@gmail.com. Visit my website, manageme.godaddysites.com. And both those areas, whether it's email or website, you can send me questions, you can refer me to sponsors, and I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to have you as a guest. I'd love to hear your thoughts around whether the guests we're having and the topics we're having are working for you, and would love to hear anything that you'd like to hear on the upcoming podcast. Thanks again for listening, and appreciate it.